So I guess we're set up enough to start. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th canto. Does anybody remember what the title of the 12th canto is? Let's see. The age of deterioration, actually. Yeah, very good. You're ahead of me. I actually didn't know. Usually I know, and I'm asking just to confirm, but I didn't know that. We don't study chapter 12, or canto 12, very often, actually. So for today, we're studying the story of Markandeya Rishi, who's one of the more amazing personalities that we'll encounter in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And his story goes over three different chapters. So we're going to read the summary for chapter 8 and chapter 10, and we'll go through chapter 9 verse by verse and talk about a particular verse, which is for today, which is 12:9-7. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I think we'll just start at one corner where the mic is, and go around each person, read one paragraph of the summary, and we'll try to listen attentively, and I'll make comments from time to time after each paragraph, or possibly after each paragraph. Yeah, start with the first paragraph, and then pass the microphone to the next person. And I'll interrupt if there's something that I want to, some point I want to make.
This chapter describes how Markandeya Rishi performed austerities, defeated by his potency, Cupid and all his associates, and offered prayers to Lord Sri Hari in his forms of Nara and Narayan.
Sri Sanaka was confused about the extraordinarily long lifespan of Sri Markandeya, who had taken birth in Shanaka's own dynasty, yet who had moved about alone in the ocean of devastation millions of years previously and seen a wonderful young child lying upon a banyan leaf. It seemed to Shanaka that Markandeya had lived through 2 days of Brahma, and he asked Sri Suta Goswami to explain this.
So at the end of each day of Brahma, there is a big devastation, and practically the whole universe is destroyed. So the idea that somebody would live beyond one day of Brahma is practically unthinkable. Therefore, it caused Shanaka Rishi to wonder, what's going on?
Suta Goswami replied that the sage Markandeya, after receiving the purificatory ritual of Brahminical initiation from his father, had fixed himself in the vow of lifelong celibacy. He then worshipped the Supreme Lord Hari for 6 lifetimes of Manu. In the 7th Manvantara, Lord Indra sent Kamdev, Cupid, and his associates to interrupt the sage's austerities, but Markandeya Rishi defeated them by the potency generated from his penance.
So, if you could go back to that paragraph. Yeah, right. There's some interesting points here. He worshipped the Supreme Lord Hari for 6 lifetimes of Manu. So, basically, we're living in the Kali Yuga, and the Kali Yuga is described to be 432,000 years. And the other yugas are longer. Dwarpa Yuga is twice as long, Treta Yuga is 3 times as long, and Satya Yuga is 4 times as long. So the whole cycle of the 4 yugas is 4,320,000 years. So this a lifetime of Manu is 71 cycles of these 4 yugas, which is 305 million years. So he worshipped the Supreme Lord for 1,830 million years. So that's a very long time. So this whole pastime is going to be dealing with large expanses of time and space that we can't, you know, generally relate to, but it just shows how serious somebody can be about devotional service. It's 71 yuga cycles or 305 million years. So another point is that Lord Indra sent Kamadev and his associates to interrupt the sage's austerities. So the idea is that people can attain posts in the heavenly planets if they perform sufficient penance. So Indra is a little attached to his position, and if sages perform enough austerities, they can take over, they can become king of heaven. Okay. Now a lot of sages don't really care about becoming king of heaven, but Indra is so paranoid that somebody might become king of heaven and kick him out that he always tries to disturb the austerities of the sages. So the traditional method of disturbing sages is to send beautiful young girls to seduce them. So Indra sends this apsara who dresses in a very, exposing her body in different ways and tries to disturb his meditation. And this Markandeya, he's just like in trance and doesn't bother him a bit. And after all that, so they feel all very embarrassed that they tried to disturb the sage. And the sage comes out unscathed, and then Nara Narayan Rishi appear to bless him, which is the next paragraph.
Then to show mercy to Markandeya, Lord Sri Hari appeared before him in the form of Nar Narayana. Sri Markandeya prostrated himself in obeisance and then worshipped the lords by offering them comfortable seats, water for washing their feet, and other respectful presentations. He then prayed, "O Almighty Lord, you bring to life the vital air of all creatures, and you also protect the three worlds, vanquish distress, and award liberation. You never allow those who have taken shelter of you to be defeated by any kind of misery. Attaining your lotus feet is the only auspicious goal for the conditioned souls, and service to you fulfills all their desires. Your pastimes enacted in the mode of pure goodness can award everyone salvation from material life. Therefore, those who are intelligent worship your personal form of pure goodness named Sri Narayana, along with Nara, who represents your unalloyed devotee."
So you can go back to the beginning of that paragraph. There's different points that could be made here. When Nara and Narayan Rishi appear, it's described he worshipped the lords by offering them comfortable seats, water for washing their feet, and other respectful presentations. So this is standard in Vedic culture. Whenever there's an exalted guest, you give them some reception. You offer them a place to sit, some water, some food. You say some nice things to them. And also he offers all kinds of different prayers. And basically the different prayers that the people offer just describe the different transcendental qualities of the Lord, all of which are glorious. So, and these are unlimited. So he just offers a few words glorifying some of the transcendental qualities of the Lord. So this... Let's describe this Nara Narayan Rishi as, if you could go to the end of the paragraph, it makes a point about them. It says, those who are intelligent worship your personal form of pure goodness named Sri Narayan, along with Nara, who represents your unalloyed devotee. So it's described that this Nara Narayan Rishi is actually an incarnation of Krishna and Arjuna. Krishna is manifest as Narayan, and this Nara is a manifestation of Arjuna. So, continue.
The living entity, bewildered by illusion, can directly understand you if he receives the knowledge presented in the Vedas and promulgated by you, the spiritual master of the entire universe. Even great thinkers like Brahma are simply bewildered when they try to understand your identity by struggling on the path of Sankhya Yoga. You yourself manifest the proponents of Sankhya and other philosophies and thus your true personal identity remains hidden beneath the designative covering of the Jiva soul. I offer my homage to you, the Mahapurusa.
So, makes the point there that the that due to the designations, we have so many designations. We are identifying ourselves with our body and our surroundings, and that we're not focused on our actual identity. We're all spiritual beings. We're part and parcel of Krishna. We have a relationship with Him. And because we're so much absorbed in the temporary designations regarding our body in this world, we can't actually understand Krishna. So that's the final point that's made. So we'll go on to the next chapter, which explains the benediction he got from Narayan and how that affected his life, really, in a very dramatic way. And so I think we'll just go through all the verses. I don't think this one's so long, and there's some very nice details of his realization here. So each read a verse.
Suta Goswami said, "The Supreme Lord Narayan, the friend of Nara, was satisfied by the proper glorification offered by the intelligent sage Markandeya. Thus the Lord addressed that excellent descendant of Brigar."
So that's one point, that Krishna can be very easily satisfied just by offering prayers. We're studying in the Nectar of Devotion, there's like 64 different items of devotional service, one of which is offering prayers. And there's a verse there that says even the great demigods praise people who offer prayers to the Supreme Lord. It's such a nice thing. And it's recommended there that one select different prayers by great personalities and offer them to the Lord. And you can also offer prayers of your own to the Lord. So it's a very simple way. Just like when we have in our relationships with other people in this world, talking with people is one way to develop a relationship. So when by offering prayers to Krishna, you're talking with Krishna. And Krishna reciprocates by talking with you in the most advanced stage, but giving spiritual guidance from within and making arrangements for your progress of devotional service from without. So don't miss the opportunity to offer prayers to the Lord. There's, of course, we sing every morning two prayers that Venam kvanantam aravinda dalaya taksam barhavitam samasitam buddha sundarangam kandar pakoti kamaniya vesesha shobham govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. That's a nice prayer which describes five different features of Krishna. Venam kvanantam, he plays the flute very expertly. Aravinda Dalai Taksham, he has beautiful lotus-like eyes. Barhavatam, he has a peacock's feather on the top of his head. Bhavatam. And last two, he has a beautiful hue of blue clouds, and he's attracting, so attractive that millions of cupids are attracted by him. So the prayers of the great personalities that have a lot of transcendental knowledge in them, and even just hearing these prayers, we can learn about the qualities of Krishna. So don't miss the opportunity to offer prayers. Continue.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Markandeya, you are indeed the best of all learned brahmanas. You have perfected your life by practicing fixed meditation upon the Supreme Soul, as well as by focusing upon me, your undeviated devotional service, your austerities, your study of the Vedas, and your strict adherence to regular principles."
So we can learn here from the description of Krishna what sorts of things please him. As devotees, we're in the business of pleasing Krishna, so how the previous personalities, the great sages, pleased Krishna, as he himself is describing, is valuable to us. Continue.
"We are perfectly satisfied with your practice of lifelong celibacy, Please choose whatever benediction you desire, since I can grant your wish. May you enjoy all good fortune.
I have a question for Shabbat.
Why
does it say we? We, it says we are perfectly satisfied. Oh, Narayan, Nara, Narayan.
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The sage said, O Lord of... Am I skipping? No. Okay. O Lord of Lords, all glory is to you. O Lord Achyuta, you remove all distress for the devotees who surrender unto you. That you have allowed me to see you is all the benediction I want.
So, the does anybody remember what Achyuta means, this name for the Lord? Yeah, very good. And infallible. Yeah. He never fails in his reciprocating the love of his devotees, especially. Another interesting point is that that last line is very... powerful statement that you have allowed me to see you as all the benediction I want. He was doing really good at this point if he just stopped. Continue.
Such demigods as Lord Brahma achieved their exalted position simply by seeing your beautiful lotus feet after their minds had become mature in yoga practice. And now, my Lord, you have personally appeared before me.
So now he's going to ask for another benediction.
O lotus-eyed Lord, O crest jewel of renowned personalities, although I am satisfied simply by seeing you, I do not wish to see your illusory potency, I do wish to see your illusory potency, by whose influence the entire world, together with its ruling demigods, considers reality to be materially variegated.
So... Actually, that's how it's described in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. If you, I can read that verse. It's sort of a nice verse. In the beginning, in the whole beginning of the Bhagavatam, there's this verse which describes how like everyone is bewildered by the illusory energy of the Lord, and so he knows this, and he sees how everyone's bewildered by this energy, but he's just wondering how is it that this energy is working so wonderfully. So let's see, there's it's described here, by him, the Supreme Lord, even great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature appear factual, although they are unreal. So this whole world is being described as unreal. It's just basically, Sariputta wrote a book called Maya, The World is Virtual Reality. And that's this whole world is just like a very large scale of virtual reality created by the Supreme Programmer, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everyone is thinking it's real. So how wonderful is it that Krishna has bewildered every single person in the universe to think this is a very substantial place, although it's temporarily manifest. So he was curious. Let's see how he's done this. So that's what he's asking for. So so today's verse is this next verse. So if you can go to the verse itself and we'll chant the Sanskrit. Okay. Sutta Vacha Itirito chita kaman Vishina bhagavan mune Tateti sasmayan pragad Padaryashramam Ishvaraha Sutavacha Itiditorchita Kaman Mushina Bhagavan Mune Tateti Sasmayan Pragad Padaryashramam Ishvaraha Sutavacha Iti Ditorchita Kamam Vrishna Bhagavan Mune Tateti Sasmayan Pragad Padaryashramam Ishvaraha chanting the Sanskrit, if it's something ends in Y, if you put the Y on the beginning of the next word, so when you say Badar Yashramam Ishvara, it doesn't break up the meter, otherwise you get an extra syllable and it messes up the meter. So. Sudavacha. Sudha Goswami said, Iti, in these words, Iditaha, glorified. Architaha, worshipped. Kamam, satisfactorily. Rishina, by the sage Markandeya. Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. Mune, O wise Shashanaka. Tati, so be it. Saha, he, Smayan, smiling, Pragat, departed. Badari Ashramam, for the sage, for the hermitage, Badrika Ashram. Ishvaraha, the Supreme Lord. Does anybody know why Badrika Ashram is called Badrika Ashram? What the name means? Yeah, I think Badri means berries, and there's lots of berries in the ashram. Is that true? Yeah, lots of berries up there in the Himalayas. Siddha Goswami said, the wise Shanaka, thus satisfied by Markandeya's praise and worship, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, smiling, replied, so be it, and then departed for his hermitage at Badrika Ashram. Somebody want to read the purport?
The words Bhagavan and Ishvara in the verse refer to the Supreme Lord in his incarnation as the twin sages Nara and Narayana. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura, the Supreme Lord smiled ruefully because he prefers that his pure devotees stay away from his illusory energy.
So the word ruefully, I looked up because it's not such a common word that we use all the time in the free online dictionary. Causing, feeling or expressing sorrow or regret. So he didn't feel so happy that he asked for that benediction. Continue.
Curiosity to see the illusory energy of the Lord sometimes develops into sinful material desire. Nonetheless, to please his devotee Markandeya, the Lord granted his request, just as a father who cannot convince his son to give up pursuing a harmful desire may let him experience some painful reaction so that he will then voluntarily desist. Thus understanding what would soon happen to Markandeya, the Lord smiled as he prepared to display the illusory potency to him.
So we'll continue reading the translations which describe exactly what he experienced. Yeah, to some extent, the illusory energy is not. We experience some of the illusory energy, but we don't experience all of the illusory energy, and we don't see how it's working in detail. So he wanted the full experience. So, so we'll see what he got. So continue reading the translations for the rest of the purport. Yeah, go back to the translations. It's easier if you just go to the one that shows all the translations, because yeah.
Are we on 12.97?
Yeah, 8.9. Thinking always of his desire.
8.9. Thinking always of his desire to see the Lord's illusory energy, the sage remained in his ashram, meditating constantly upon the Lord within fire, the sun, the moon, water, the earth, air, lightning, and his own heart, and worshipping him with paraphernalia conceived in his mind. But sometimes, overwhelmed by waves of love for the Lord, Markandeya would forget to perform his regular worship.
So we've been actually studying in the Nectar Devotion. There's different stages. There's what's called sadhana bhakti, and it has two divisions. Vaidhi bhakti, practice, devotional service and practice, and raga nuga. So it's described sometimes he was just so absorbed in the ecstasy of love. He didn't do his regular worship, but his spontaneous affection is appreciated by the Lord, which is Raganuga. Continue.
O Brahmana Shaunaka, best of the Bhragus, one day while Markandeya was performing his evening worship on the bank of the Pushpabhadra, a great wind suddenly arose.
That wind created a terrible sound and brought in its wake fearsome clouds that were accompanied by lightning and roaring thunder, and that poured down on all sides torrents of rain as heavy as wagon wheels.
So this is the devastation. We were talking about devastations earlier. There's four kinds of devastation. So this is the devastation at the end of Brahma's day, as far as I can see.
Then the four great oceans appeared on all sides, swallowing up the surface of the earth with their wind-tossed waves. And these oceans were terrible sea monsters, fearful whirlpools and ominous rumblings.
The sage saw all the inhabitants of the universe, including himself, tormented within and without by the harsh winds, the bolts of lightning, and the great waves rising beyond the sky. As the whole earth flooded, he grew perplexed and fearful.
So this devastation at the end of Brahma's day happens every 4,320 million years. So we don't generally worry about it too much because it's so far in the future, but this is what it's like.
Even as Markandeya looked on, the rains pouring down from the clouds filled the ocean more and more until that great sea, its waters violently whipped into terrifying waves by hurricanes, covered up all the earth's islands, mountains, and continents.
The water inundated the earth, outer space, heaven, and the celestial region. Indeed, the entire expanse of the universe was flooded in all directions, and out of all its inhabitants, only Markandeya remained. His matted hair scattered, the great sage wandered about alone in the water as if dumb and blind.
Tormented by hunger and thirst, attacked by monstrous makaras and timingala fish, and battered by the wind and waves, he moved aimlessly through the infinite darkness into which he had fallen. As he grew increasingly exhausted, he lost all sense of direction and could not tell the sky from the earth.
At times he was engulfed by the great whirlpools, sometimes he was beaten by the mighty waves, and at other times the aquatic monsters threatened to devour him as they attacked one another. Sometimes he felt lamentation, bewilderment, misery, happiness or fear, and other times he experienced such terrible illness and pain that he felt himself dying.
How could you feel happiness?
When he wasn't drowning
under
the water.
Yeah, really.
Countless millions of years passed as Markandeya wandered about in that deluge, his mind bewildered by the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Once, while wandering in the water, the Brahmana Markandeya discovered a small island upon which stood a young banyan tree bearing blossoms and fruits.
One thing is, so what really does survive during the devastation? It's described that, I didn't read all the purports here, I just read some of the purports related to it, but I couldn't really find it, but elsewhere it's described that even when at the end of the day of Brahma, when everything's devastated, Jagannath Puri is not devastated, and Navadvipa's not devastated, and Vrindavan's not devastated. Somehow they survive the deluge all around. So, the pole star wouldn't be also, because it's described. So there were a few places where he could run into land. So continue. I think we're on 21, are we? Yes.
21?
Yeah.
Upon a branch of the northeast portion of that tree, he saw an infant boy lying with a leaf. The child's effulgence was swallowing up the darkness.
And we can do the we can do the translation and purport of the next one. Yeah, yeah. No worries. Yeah, just click there. You got it.
The infant's dark blue complexion was the color of a flawless emerald. His lotus face shone with a wealth of beauty, and his throat bore the marks like lines on a conch shell. He had a broad chest, finely shaped nose, beautiful eyebrows, and lovely ears that resembled pomegranate flowers. And he had inner folds like a conch shell's spirals. The corner of his eyes were reddish like the whorl of a lotus, and the effulgence of his coral-like lips slightly reddened the nectarian, enchanting smile on his face. As he breathed, his splendid hair trembled on his deep navel, became distorted by the moving folds of the skin on his abdomen, which resembled a banyan leaf. The exalted Brahmana watched with amazement as the infant took hold of his one lotus foot with his graceful fingers, placed a toe within his mouth and began to suck.
Somebody want to read the purport?
The young child was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Krishna wondered, "So many devotees are hankering for the nectar of my lotus feet. Therefore, let me personally experience that nectar." Thus the Lord, playing like an ordinary baby, began to suck on his toes.
So that's a very must have been very refreshing for Markandeya to see, after being tossed around in this deluge for hundreds of millions of years, to run into Krishna on this banyan leaf. So then we can continue reading the rest.
As Markandeya beheld the child, all his weariness vanished. Indeed, so great was his pleasure that the lotus feet of his heart, along with his lotus eyes, fully blossomed, and the hairs on his body stood on end. Confused as to the identity of the wonderful infant, the sage approached him.
Just then the child inhaled, drawing Markandeya within his body like a mosquito. There the sage found the entire universe arrayed as it had been before its dissolution. Seeing this, Markandeya was most astonished and perplexed.
Yeah, so sometimes we're breathing and we breathe a bug inside. So, but when Krishna breathes, he can breathe a whole universe inside. But the amazing thing that he saw is like within, inside of Krishna, he saw everything as it was before the devastation.
The sage saw the entire universe, the sky, heavens and earth, the stars, mountains, oceans, great islands and continents, the expanse in every direction, the saintly and demoniac living beings, the forests, countries, rivers, cities and mines, the agricultural villages and cow pastures, and the occupational and spiritual activities of the various social divisions. He also saw the basic elements of creation along with all their byproducts, as well as time itself, which regulates the progression of countless ages within the days of Brahma. In addition, he saw everything else created for use in material life. All this he saw manifest before him as if it were real.
So Krishna creates this whole elaborate universe, then he destroys it with tons of water, and then he breathes in all the water and whatever in Markandeya into himself, and then within himself he has this whole universe created as it was outside. So this is like, this is the potency of the Supreme Lord. Yeah, within himself, he has the whole universe arranged as it was within himself. That's what Yeah. Markandeya was breathed in, and then with inside Krishna, he saw the whole universe as it was, as it originally appeared outside. So, yeah, it's just pretty amazing. So,
he saw before him the Himalaya mountains, the Pushpabhadra River, and his own hermitage, where he had had the audience of the sages Narayan. Then, as Markandeya beheld the entire universe, the infant exhaled, expelling the sage from his body and casting him back into the ocean of dissolution.
In that vast sea, he again saw the banyan tree growing on the tiny island and the infant boy lying within the leaf. The child glanced at him from the corner of his eyes with a smile imbued with the nectar of love, and Markandeya took him into his heart through his eyes. Greatly agitated, the sage ran to embrace the transcendental personality of Godhead.
At that moment, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original master of all mysticism and who is hidden within everyone's heart, became invisible to the sage, just as the achievements of an incompetent person can suddenly vanish.
After the Lord disappeared, O Brahmana, the banyan tree, the great water, and the dissolution of the universe all vanished as well, and in an instant, Markandeya found himself back in his own hermitage just as before.
So that's the wonderful demonstration of his illusory energy that the Lord showed Markandeya at his request. So the story continues in the next chapter. And we can just read the summary of that, because otherwise you'll never complete it. Tenth, yeah. Mm-hmm.
In this chapter, Suta Goswami describes how Markandeya Rishi received benediction from Lord Shiva. Once, as Lord Shiva was traveling the sky with his wife Parvati, he came across Sri Markandeya, merged in meditative trance. At the request of Parvati, Lord Shiva presented himself before the sage to grant him the result of his austerities. Coming out of his trance, Sri Markandeya Rishi saw Lord Shiva, the spiritual master of the three worlds, together with Parvati, and he worshipped them by offering them obeisances, words of greeting, and a sitting place.
Then Lord Shiva praised the saintly devotees of the Personality of Godhead and requested Sri Markandeya to choose whatever benediction he desired. Markandeya begged for unflinching devotion to the Supreme Lord Sri Hari, to the devotees of the Supreme Lord, and to Lord Shiva himself. Satisfied with Markandeya's devotion, Lord Shiva awarded him the boons of renown, freedom from old age and death until the time of universal dissolution, knowledge of all three phases of time, renunciation, realized knowledge, and the position of a teacher of the Puranas.
So, basically, when this time he had another opportunity to ask for a benediction. So, he learned from his previous lesson not to ask to see the illusory energy of the Lord. But this time he asked for a better benediction. He asked for the benediction of unflinching devotion to the Lord, devotion to the devotees of the Lord, and to Lord Shiva, who he got the audience of, and who's famous as the best of the Vaishnavas, Vaishnavaram Yatha Shambhu. And so the final.
Those who chant and hear the story of Markandeya Rishi will attain liberation from material life, which is based on the accumulated desires generated from fruit of work.
Yes. So does anybody have any questions about any of the amazing things we heard about today in Srimad Bhagavatam?
How did he, when you were first saying that he, how did he get that long life? Or how did he, you know, live within the 2 days of Brahma? But it just said that he got like the Brahma, like a thread. But how did he get the long life in the first place? I know he did austerities for that long, but how did he get that long life in such in the first place?
I don't think it actually says how I got that a life that long. Of course, we didn't read the translations of chapter 8, did we? I don't know if that gives any insight into it. I could glance over it quickly and see if there's anything about it there. Well, yeah, it was. Yeah, but even in Satya Yuga, they only lived to be 100,000 years, which is definitely a lot shorter than 1,800,000,000 years. Yeah, I don't think it says how I lived that long. But I think the fact of the matter is that you can live, by practicing yoga, you can live longer. By not engaging in fruitive activities, you can live longer. So I guess you could say by the power of his austerities.
He was worshipping the Lord, right?
Yes, he was worshipping the Lord and performing austerities by that.